Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
I am so glad to be talking with Julianne Smith, primarily known for her work on the Spiritual Sounding Board blog, but also a speaker as well. So thank you for dropping into Mindshift Podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I was a little, trying to get connected and, with different parts of the world, but hey, we did it.
Yeah, that's one thing about me is that if I find someone I want to interview, I will chase them and chase them and chase them for as long as unless they tell me no. And go away, which has happened before. Someone told me, I don't want to talk about this stuff. She had written a book and she didn't want to talk about it. And okay, that's fair enough, But in your case, I'm so glad because I came across your work through researching Christian Reconstructionism, R.J. Rush Dooney, Homeschooling, Quiverful. And I came across your Spiritual Sounding Board blog, which obviously that's right in your wheelhouse, isn't it? Can you tell us a little bit of your backstory? You came out of this movement yourself.
Yep. So I only homeschooled my kids for about 23 years. I have 7 children. I kind of bought into the full quiver thing. So I had a passel of kids. Mm-hmm. So I started homeschooling them from the very beginnings. And my first few went all the way through high school in homeschooling. And we participated in co-ops. Eventually, though, I started questioning things. Actually, what really happened was we got involved in a church that I now call a cult. Mm. And a few years after we left, I left a negative Google review on the church's site.
That's enough and, to get you in trouble.
Well, it sure did. He did not like that. Something about narcissists, they like to look up their names and see who's talking about them. They're very threatened by that. So he uncovered that very quickly. And I just kept on blogging. And eventually he said he was going to sue me. And I kind of rolled my eyes. And he actually did for $500,000.
Whoa.
He sued me along with 4 others. Long story short, of course we won because in a defamation lawsuit, if you're telling the truth, you're telling the truth.
Yeah,
and it's okay.
It's
okay to speak publicly and tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not the truth, but you believe it's the truth, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we won. My story went viral because, what kind of a pastor would sue a mom of 7 children, It was very newsworthy. It took off and went viral. And then I had over 500 emails, just people interested in my story and the spiritual abuse and that kind of thing. And I realized, whoa, there are a lot of hurting people, a lot of people who have suffered spiritual abuse. And I realized that this was a good platform to talk about it and to let others share their stories. So that's why it's called the Spiritual Sounding Board. It's where it gives other people an opportunity to share their stories. And I use it as a place to expose bad teachings and harmful ideologies and practices. So I've been doing it since 2012. It's a very difficult thing to do, but yet it's very powerful. And I'm just so grateful that it's been able to help a lot of people just get out of that nonsense and be free from those crippling, really, truly crippling emotional and spiritual grasp that's just held them for many years. So
as you say, the cult-like aspects of it, that's what got me started. It led me to Christian Reconstructionism and Dominion Theology off the back of researching the cults, because I was raised in the Bill Gothard movement myself. My parents were subscribers to his teachings in the Seattle area. And when I saw some documentaries over here in the UK, it was a couple of years ago, on cult survivors, I suddenly realized, wait a minute, these people are telling my story. And why is that? Because I wasn't raised in a cult. I was raised in a church. And I thought, wait a minute, that cannot be a coincidence, that the religious trauma and all these other things, the abuse, as you say, I wasn't sexually abused, but I've certainly experienced spiritual abuse growing up in this fundamentalist church. And that's what, that when the penny dropped, as they say, then I thought, wait a minute, I need to start researching that. So I started talking to cult experts, reading books on cults. That led me into Dominion. And I saw The Family on Netflix and I'm like, oh my God, down the rabbit hole we go, you know?
Well, isn't it interesting that I call the people who were caught up into Bill Gothard and his teachings, I say that's cult.
Yeah,
it's like a cult.
It is.
And when we commonly think of a cult, we think of gathering at a place together. But in this circumstance, we have families all over the world who are adhering to his teachings and then instilling that onto their families, but it is done in a cult-like way.
So
it's not your traditional type of cult, but the end result is the same.
Mm-hmm. But yet the parallels are there, because as you say, okay, they didn't have a massive cult compound like some, you think of, you know, Jonestown or some of these other ones, Branch Davidians, but they did have a headquarters where a lot of sexual abuse occurred, of interns, young women that he and his brother groomed. So they do fit the profile of the typical sort of cult leader in that respect. But as you say, it's a weird one, because they did come together for his seminars, which he obviously loved doing, because I remember going to him as a kid in Seattle in the 70s and the early 80s, you know, so I was full on, I was into it, but he didn't have control over each individual family. It was just his teachings, as you say, were inculcated throughout families all over the nation then, and now it's worldwide. I mean, IBLP is a massive organization.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They've
sure
got
is.
Fronts. They've got all kinds of front organizations. This is the thing about them. They start digging into it. They're into prison ministries. They've got orphanages. They've got Alert Academy where they train kids in paramilitary rescue down in Texas. They've got a law school in California. I mean, it just, they're into public schools in Florida, on and on and on. And they're very sneaky. They're deceptive. They don't tell people that it's actually part of IBLP and they're teaching Gothard's principles in prisons and public schools and business. I mean, your head just starts spinning. Yeah.
Character training in Russia.
Exactly. They're in the Eastern Europe and they've got orphanages and you're like, what are you people doing? Especially the deception piece of it. They don't know. And they come in offering to train up people. And it's like, oh, this is a wonderful, you know, ministry, American thing. And it's like, wait a minute, it's a cult.
It sounds compelling, you know, he says the right words. And I actually had an opportunity to talk to him on the phone.
Oh, really?
Doing my investigative blogging, and I had contacted headquarters and asked a question, and the guy says, well, why don't you just call him? And I said, well, do you have his number?
Okay.
He gave me his number. Sure. And so I called, and of course, I'm a woman, and he says, well, where's your husband? And I said, well, he's not here, but I would like to talk to you. And I kind of sneakily did not say that I was a blogger. I just left that off the table. And then later I felt guilty and I called him back. I said, I just wanted to let you know that really I am a blogger and I'm wanting to know this information. But it was fascinating talking to him, because when I asked him the pointed questions, why are you starting these new ministries when you have not made amends, you have not admitted to what you did to these girls sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I went right at him and he just blew me off. And it was amazing how quick he would change the conversation around. And I kept bringing him back and he kept switching it around. He was like a used car salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept on, well, the Lord told me to do this and I'm starting this. And this is what God told me in a dream. I go, Mr. Gothard, go back to this. Why, you know, so he's very masterful and I'm a pretty smart, strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I could sense what was going on, but I could see how if somebody, you know, had him up on a pedestal and, you know, that reverence, there's no way that they could win. There's just no way. He's just very, very powerful.
He could tie in knots with his twisted logic and spiritual sounding answers and all the rest of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a lot of those posts on the Recovering Grace website, which I'm sure you have as well, about the many, many women who've come forward and alleged that he's abused them, and their stories are all very much almost exactly the same. And yet most of them didn't know each other. And so you think, okay, there's a clear pattern here. He's a sexual predator. He was drunk on his power, I guess, and he got away with it. Yeah. And his brother got away with it for decades, going back to the late 70s, 80s. I mean, so it's a pattern. It's been repeating. And so now he's disgraced, in air quotes, but he's never really suffered the consequences. His lawsuit was dismissed.
Yeah. Right.
They threw it out of court.
So. And he's still doing ministries. He still has a following. He was able to take his address book, you know, of contacts from the headquarters and connect with all of those families. So he's still doing it.
He's still doing it.
In his roundabout way.
Book. Well, yeah. I've read some of the articles on his, he's got his own personal website. And it's just bizarre. The ramblings of a madman. And yet, like you said, people are still following him. And he's basically gotten away with it.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep.
Well, now somehow maybe we can bring this all around for people that don't know who Bill Gothard is and all this stuff. How does it all, or does it all, tie together? Because, I mean, going through these bullet points that you pull off your spiritual sounding board, you've got issues, you've got Christian Reconstructionism, homeschooling, the Quiverful movement, sexual and spiritual abuse, dominion theology, Christian nationalism. To me, a lot of it makes sense if you put it under the umbrella of this biblical patriarchy sort of model.
Yes.
Does a lot of that or all those sort of fit under that umbrella?
Right. Well, I would put it, I would take it back to Rush Dooney. I believe that he was the most influential in developing and bringing the ideas, his own ideas about how to bring everything under God's covenant and, you know, the civil, the church government. That there's three aspects. There's a family government, the church government, and the civil government.
And
the idea, so it's under God's covenant. The nuclear family is the basis. And then the husband is the head of the family. The wife and the children are in submission. And then you have the church has its own, you know, ecclesiastic governance system. Right. And then you have civil government. And those are all under biblical law. And you will find that those were air quotes I said.
I can see it.
I know you could see it. I decided I better say air quotes. But anyway, that covers theonomy. But what he did was propose a way of bringing this to fruition. And his ideas were to go through the academic route and get families on board with homeschooling and these ideologies, teach them from babyhood on up. And then what was really, I think... And I think there needs to be more emphasis on this. I believe that the daughters are the key to this whole thing. And the reason I say that is one of their big deals is they want to raise these families and they want to keep the daughters in the home underneath that spiritual headship of her father. And they don't want daughters to go to school, college after, you know, being homeschooled. They're very reluctant to have these daughters work outside the home. Their job is to create these daughters in a way that they're going to be carrying on this type of living, this type of belief system. So if you get the daughters on board at a very young age, they know that their father is going to probably select or at least be very influential in their marriage partner. The father will be deciding whether the future husband meets his criteria and furthers that agenda. So if she's already trusting her father to do this for her, she's going to feel perfectly fine. Oh, this is the way it's supposed to be. The courtship, the modesty, the purity ideology. She's going to take that on. And she knows that that is her main purpose in life is to get married to someone like-minded, get married young so that you have a lot of fertility ahead of you.
A lot of kids.
A lot of fertility years ahead of you. You have a lot of children and that cycle perpetuates on down through the generations. Doug Phillips loved that. You know, he was saying that 200 year I can't remember how many hundred years, but anyway, the certain plan, and he had it all figured out. If, if this many people did this, then this, you know, it would have this kind of impact on in America and take over the American government system for God, you know? Yeah. So it really was a smart thing. And I sensed it all along. I didn't know what was going on. We adhered to some of those things. My eldest daughter got a purity ring. We didn't do everything. We allowed her, air quotes, to go to the community college. And I felt guilty for it.
Yeah. How liberal can you be?
Exactly.
Shocking.
So you let her anyway, out. I know. So I really think the daughters were a key part of that, keeping that going. And once daughters started having a mind of their own and used their critical thinking skills, it kind of turned this upside down. And one of the things that my blog has done is I've been able to tell some of those stories of young women who essentially raised their younger siblings because they were the eldest of these large quiverful families, and they got married young in a courtship situation, and then the marriage did not work. Wonder why. Yeah, if your father's picking your spouse for you. And yeah, so there's a lot of young women and young men who have been into this cycle, you know, this ideology, and gotten married with this kind of idea of carrying this on, and it didn't work. It doesn't work. When you get out of your parents' home, hopefully you're going to start thinking and questioning and exposing yourself to a little bit more than outside of your immediate family and church circle. So that's what's happened. It backfired on them.
There are still people out there, obviously, who are doing it. But everything you just described, I go straight to the Stephen Hassan's The Bite model of cults. You know, behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. So you're raised in this environment that is, it's like a family cult. I guess Dr. Yanya Lalit, she would say it's a family cult. It doesn't have to be a cult on a compound somewhere with a messianic leader. The father could be the cult leader in that sense by indoctrinating their children in this family cult. And then you say it's supposed to perpetuate, isn't it?
Right. Well, and here's the thing. I can't tell you how many young adults I've spoken with who are shunned by their own families because they did not adopt those belief systems and ideologies.
Which, you know,
they're the black sheep.
The dispensing of existence. When you're done, you're just, you no longer have the right to exist. So we're just not going to talk to you anymore. You're as good as dead to us.
Unbelievable. Can you imagine? I mean, it's one thing to do this at a church where, and I get that, you know, the churches can be such a strong community, and especially if you only do church related things, that is devastating. I get that. But imagine your own family doing that to you. You know, think of the holidays, think of the birthdays. That has got to be so traumatic. And I mean, trauma.
Hugely.
Yeah,
your own family has shunned you. It doesn't want to talk to you. Yeah, I mean, I've had it happen to us. You know, my family, we walked away. I was a pastor. I was a Bible college teacher. We kind of walked away from all of that. And some of my family members in the States are still very much into their really fundamentalist sort of Christian worldview. You know, so they've disowned us. They've written us off. And I always think, now, how is that the love of Christ? If you're professing to be a Christian, or shouldn't you be even more loving to someone who you think's strayed from the fold and trying to win them back? How's shunning going to do? I guess, but that's what Paul said, though. You turn them over to Satan and, you know, let Satan flog them for a while, and maybe they'll repent and come back in, and then you can welcome them back with open arms. There's some biblical
precedent.
Yeah, I guess so.
I know, you know, but then there's that one lost sheep. So I, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. It's crazy making. And the thing that I guess it upsets me the most is that, you know, when we're talking spiritual abuse, you're talking something so deep inside, you know, it's your core. And to have that kind of injury to your core, you know, it really messes you up. It messes with your head. And it's just very devastating. It takes a long, long time to work through that.
Yeah, I've spoken with Dr. Marlene Winnell about religious trauma syndrome, and that's what you're describing, isn't it? Is she says it's a double whammy because you not only do you experience the trauma while you're in their cult or their religion, when you're shunned and you leave it, then you've got all the trauma of the guilt and the grief and the loss and the shame and the anger and all the things you have to work through on the other side of it. So it's a double whammy, isn't it?
Yeah. And another thing is that where do you go to discuss this? Are there, exactly. I don't know of any spiritual abuse support groups, you know, in my area. Really, the only thing that I know of is online. And that's where you can connect with others and understand that process and grieve and try to get to a place where you can stand on your two feet again and feel whole. But it's a weird kind of trauma because there's no AA meetings for it. There's no, it's very isolating.
Exactly. Well, and what Marlene Winnell says is that a lot of just regular therapists don't know anything about it. They're not familiar with the term. I remember talking to a grief therapist here in the UK, and she'd never even heard of the term religious trauma syndrome. And I pointed her to some articles online by Dr. Marlene Winnell. And I said, I think you probably should read up on this. If you're a grief therapist, this might be something that you could actually benefit from.
Right? Well, I know when I was in the midst of my lawsuit, I had such great support people who definitely understood it and just walked alongside me. And they were all online and they had all, some of them had experienced spiritual abuse. My close friends said, you need to be getting help. You need to get therapy. I didn't feel like I needed to because I had such great support from people who understood and got it. So, but anyway, just to appease them, I did go see a therapist. And you're right. I had to teach her. And I finally said, this is enough. I mean, she should be paying me. Knew way more.
Why am I getting, I'm paying for this, man.
I know. What's interesting is I've had a lot of people in training, who are getting their master's or going for their PhD and studying spiritual abuse. So I've had a number of them reach out to me and ask favors, like, can you ask your blog people if they'd be willing to do a questionnaire? And I go, oh, absolutely. I'm all for it. Let's help these new psychologists and mental health professionals really get to understanding this.
I was going to say, I was really unfortunate. My friend Janice Selby, she's up in Canada. She was going to host a conference in Vancouver in April called the Conference on Religious Trauma. And I think it probably was the first one that's ever been done with some amazing keynote speakers. Of course, Dr. Marlene Winnell was going to be there. Janja Lalic and many other people were going to come, but it had to be canceled because of the coronavirus situation. She is going to be able to do it online at some point, I think. So I'll send you the links for that. That's a good resource. I was thinking too, there's also the Recovering from Religion as well as the Secular Therapy Project, which people can tap into. It's an online resource and you can speak with a therapist online. As you say, no matter where you are in the country or the world, you can talk to a therapist who understands religious trauma and all that. So there are resources out there.
Yep. ICSA.
Yeah.
Do you know about that? International Cultic Studies Association. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. In fact, I listened to some recent, they had some live events that they recorded and now they're up on YouTube. They were fantastic. Mm. And they are seeing a growing need to address the Christian church cult stuff. Mm-hmm. And they deal with all kinds of cults. I mean, even yoga cults and other Far Eastern religious cults, but they really are growing in leaps and bounds on uncovering stuff in evangelical Christian. So they're very good. And I have a dear friend, Ken Garrett, Pastor Ken Garrett. He did his doctorate in spiritual abuse as well. Mm-hmm. And he's great as well.
Well, there's been some studies on that for sure. One of the things I came across, I don't know if you're familiar with Conway and Siegelman. They wrote the book Snapping and Holy Terror. In 1982, Snapping came out in 1979, and they were describing the cult phenomenon as it was sweeping America in the 70s. The book came out, I think, about 6 months after the Jonestown tragedy, and so it was perfectly timed. It came right out, but I've had them on the show a couple times. Now, they wrote an article, I think it was in 82 or 83, and they described the neurological damage that cults do to people, and one of the shocking things was they said that actually fundamentalist Bible churches and Bible cults are among the most damaging neurologically to people's minds, and they've studied it scientifically. They call it information disease, and that's what happens. The repetitive, the tongues, the chanting, and the ecstatic worship, and those kind of mind-stilling, mind-controlling techniques that we find in churches affect us neurologically. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So yeah, it's out there. It's just a matter of finding the research.
Right.
We are just going to take a really short break here in my conversation with Julie Ann. This is really great to be able to talk to someone who's been part of this movement for decades, who then started realizing what it was all about and began to deconstruct and get out of it all, and now actually turning around and exposing a lot of the spiritual abuse, church abuse, sexual abuse, all kinds of stuff that goes on within Christian homeschooling groups and churches that subscribe to the biblical patriarchy doctrine. And we're going to get a little bit more into that in the second half in just a minute. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Mia. She is the newest Patreon supporter of this show, and that's really hugely appreciated. You can also support this show for as little as $1 a month, but you can go up to $5 or $10 a month if you believe in the work that I'm doing. And if it's proven to be helpful for you, that is greatly appreciated. It helps me cover my monthly expenses. What do you get for being a Patreon supporter? You get access to our closed Mindshift Podcast Facebook group, and it's in there that we have our monthly Zoom calls. We do these every month, and in fact, in just a couple of days here, once this episode drops on the 19th of July, we are going to have Kristen Cobes Dumais. She's going to be our guest for July. And then in August, we're going to have Julie Ann herself. She's going to be our guest next month. And then in September, I've already got Catherine Stewart booked. And then speaking of Catherine Stewart, that is the next episode that's going to drop here on Mindshift Podcast. I'm super excited to be talking to her again. We are going to be covering her book that came out in 2012 called The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children. And this book, it is literally quite chilling the more I've read my way through it. I'm nearly done with it now, and I'm absolutely excited to be talking to Catherine about the content of this book. And what she does in that book is really a masterful sort of a journalistic investigation of the implications of a landmark Supreme Court ruling that was delivered in 2001. And the name of that lawsuit was The Good News Club versus the Milford Central School. And what it does, she really does a great job of laying out how that ruling not only opened the door for the Good News Club to be allowed to use public schools, she goes a lot further than that, and she demonstrates how it also really kicked the doors wide open for a whole host of other Christian evangelistic and church planning sorts of ministries to use public schools and have the taxpayers pay for it. And really, this is one aspect of what I keep talking about, is this idea of Christian dominionism. And really, as Julianne's going to describe in a minute here, as a homeschooling mom, how she got indoctrinated into that whole thing as well. And so when you actually step back, zoom out, and look at the big picture, this is, again, another aspect of this issue of dominionism, Christians wanting to take dominion. And one way to do that is, as R.J. Rushdoony described it in his vision of Christian Reconstructionism, what the church needs to be about is raising up generations of godly children, primarily through homeschooling, but also including Christian schools. And then eventually, there's going to be enough of them where they'll take over the world and establish a godly order. So let's understand how it was that Julianne basically got indoctrinated into the movement herself, just as a normal, everyday, average Christian mom wanting to homeschool her kids. Let's catch up with Julianne in the second half of this chat. Can we swing back and talk about some of this? You were talking about Quiverful, and you described it really well, but I'm wondering, okay, you go back to a guy like Rushdoony. Okay, some of the stuff he wrote was so controversial that a lot of people didn't adopt all of his teachings, right? Because he advocated the death penalty for homosexuals and incorrigible teens, and he was a Holocaust denier, and he was a pro-slavery, you know, advocate and all the rest of it. How does his teaching end up influencing the homeschooling movement so much? Because I look on homeschooling sites, you can't find his name anywhere. And yet I hear the language, I see the talking points, and I go, oh, that's Rushdoony. That's Rushdoony. I know where they got that. When they talk about statist schools or government schools or, you know, secular humanism or a biblical worldview, you go, okay, these were Rushdoony's talking points. how does it filter through into these kind of movements?
My idea is that it was the timing, because we had the beginnings of homeschoolers, you know, some secular and some Christian, but the Christian people were wanting to make sure that they could do it legally. And of course decided that, well, the government is evil and the government is going to prevent them. So we need to do what we can do to make sure that we can continue homeschooling our kids because, you know, the Bible says that's our responsibility. So right there, the Bible says it's our responsibility. That is the tie with Rush Dooney, what he said. I think they just latched onto that idea. And then they heard him talking about taking over the government. So it was that government piece and parents are responsible for your children. It became a beautiful stepping stone to present this big idea out to the masses. And also he's Calvinist. And if you look at all of the pillars of the homeschooling movement, they all have Calvinist backgrounds. And that's a foundational issue right there. I didn't know what Calvinism was when I started homeschooling. And so what happened was one of the pillars of homeschooling, Greg Harris, he's from the Pacific Northwest. Yep. I actually went to his church. I went to his church a number of times. In fact, I my family was part of a church plant in Hillsboro, Oregon for a little bit. So one of the things that he did that really propelled this movement was they started state homeschool conventions. And then HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, that was with Mike Ferris. He started that. They were sending out mailings saying, you know, if you're a homeschooler, the government is out to get you. You know, they would give you these rules and say, tape these on the inside of your cupboard, because if a police officer comes to your house, you need to know what to say. And they were into fear-mongering, you know, and don't let your kids outside to play during these school hours, because if your neighbor sees your kids outside playing, they're going to turn you into CPS and, you know, your kids could be taken away. So all of that joined together made this massive force. You had Homeschool Legal Defense Association promoting these state homeschool conventions. And then they had these keynote speakers. And who were they? They were Doug Phillips of Vision Forum. They were Greg Harris. They were the people from Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Mike Ferris, Chris Klicka. And they were the ones who fed us all of those ideologies. I remember going to these conferences, and here's the deal. If you wanted to do Christian homeschooling, you wanted your materials to have a Christian foundation. And I wasn't into any of this wackadoo stuff. I mean, I thought I was just like generic Christian. Yeah. That's what I wanted.
Your typical evangelical. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, my main objective for homeschooling was because we were in the military at the time and I didn't want to have to uproot my kids. And, you know, it just seemed to be that I could have a constant schooling environment.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And they wouldn't have to. Yeah. And I'm all for good education. So yeah, we could throw in a little bit of, you know, if it talks about, you know, against abortion, I don't care for abortion. So yeah, we could throw some of that in, and there's some Christian background. I'm okay with that, but I didn't know what was really going on.
The extent of it all.
Yeah. So I went into these conferences and their weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think at least 2 days. And they would have a whole room full of vendors and curricula, but then they had a schedule of speakers and keynote speakers. And one of the things that struck me was, wait a minute, I thought this is about homeschooling. Why? What is this courtship stuff? I paid to, you know, I'm wanting to know stuff like how to deal with my wiggly child. You know, how best ways to teach delight directed learning,
educational, how to be a better teacher, basically. Yeah. Teacher training.
Yeah. Right. So it was okay. I get the point of, okay, well, let's teach moms to have a good scheduling thing. Okay. That's practical. Sure. Yeah. I can do that. But when it came to purity stuff and keep your daughters at home and all of this, like I call it wackadoo. I didn't understand it. And I was like, whatever. And I'll just go and get what I need. But slowly, as you continue to dabble in this stuff, what was weird then becomes somewhat normal. And your brain goes, I'm not sure about that. Well, I guess maybe, you know, your brain just starts eventually normalizing when you're with it. All of these people,
mm-hmm.
you start adopting some of those things before you even know it. Mm-hmm. And you want to be part of this thing because you so strongly believe, hey, we're doing a good thing. We're raising our godly children and we're having good education and, you know, but yeah, it took me to places I had no clue I was going.
No kidding. And I think Catherine Stewart does a really good job in her books about describing there is a disconnect between those key leaders at the top of these Christian right and dominionist nationalist organizations and what she calls the foot soldiers at the bottom, people like yourself who are just trying to do the right thing for their kids and their families. And yet there's a completely different narrative at the top. They've got an agenda. They've got a strategy. They've got a plan. You don't know what it necessarily is, but as it infiltrates down to the lower levels of the grassroots movement, it's all, like you say, this reconstructionist, dominionist stuff, but they don't use those terms. They don't say, we're going to turn you into a reconstructionist. No. They're just saying, this is what this is. This is how you get stuff out.
Well, and, you know, Rush Juni was absolutely right. You know, raise a bunch of kiddos and then you could take them to be lobbying at the state capitol. And you better believe they did that. When HSLDA had some kind of law that was threatening to go through, all they had to do was send out notice and everybody would just pass it along. Even before, you know, it was the internet, the World Wide Web, there was email. Mm-hmm. And we were able to just spam everybody we knew who was homeschooling and get them on board and say, hey, we're all meeting at the Capitol, bring your kids. And, you know, if you've got a passel of kids, that's quite impressive. And it, you know, the media's there. And so they were very, very influential politically. So yeah, that's crazy.
They still are. I can remember as a kid growing up, I grew up listening to Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson. Okay, he's an advocate for homeschooling. He had Dr. Raymond Moore on there many, many times, hugely popular shows. And I can remember as a kid, a young teen, hearing him talk about legislation that was, like you say, threatening or something about where they said it's going to impact our religious freedoms or whatever. You need to call your congressperson, call your senator, ring your local state representatives. And people would, like you say, they'd get involved. That was way before the internet. That was back in the 70s and early 80s. He was talking about that. And man, we were all over that. Get on the phone, call your congressman, call your senator, write them a letter, you know, and that's what we did. And we didn't know why we were doing it. Because Dobson told us that was important. So that's how it works.
Oh, yeah.
And now they've got the internet, as you say. You can get online and look at, you know, the Family Research Council and HSLDA and get in touch with your local. And they're massively powerful. They've got deep pockets and, you know, representatives all over the country. And they're expanding worldwide. So this is a huge concern. It really is. I'm glad you're doing the work you're doing. I know you've kind of slowed down a little bit. Are you planning on getting back into blogging a little bit more, or what's your kind of future look like?
Well, I was telling you earlier before we started hitting the record button, I'm in a transition. So I'm working full time now where I wasn't before. I'm still, you know, talking to people who are in a crisis or reach out to me. And when I do that, that takes a good chunk of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I can do the investigative blogging as much with a full-time job, but I'm definitely going to be using the blog or continue to use the blog as a place for people to share their stories, because I really find that that is the best way for people to connect at an emotional level and all of a sudden come to the realization, whoa, that's just like me. That sounds familiar. And maybe there's something to that. It wasn't until I read personal stories of spiritual abuse and connected with those stories that I was able to validate myself. and say, uh-huh, yeah, that happened.
It is, yeah,
and
it's hugely empowering.
So I took it a deeper step, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you find out, A, I'm not alone, B, I'm not crazy, and then C, there's thousands, millions of people all over the world potentially who have suffered this religious trauma and all the rest of it. It's just, like you say, it's a matter of connecting. So that's my question. How can people find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Oh, spiritualsoundingboard.com.
That's easy.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, my blog is open. So anytime there's an article, if anybody needs help, man, just post a comment. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is that there's a solid group of people who've been following for years. And so it is a safe place. And if somebody wants to share their story or wants some help, just reach out. I can switch things around and post it anonymously and mm-hmm. Post it so that people can comment. It's just a really cool place where people can share and get support. And there's some common understanding there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. And Kathy is my co-blogger. She's wonderful. Our email addresses are up there at the top on the right-hand side. But yeah,
that's
happy
the way to
have
to get
anybody
a hold of
reach out.
I've read some of the articles, like you say, on your blog, people that, like you say, talking about describing their own stories, which is hugely powerful. Man, almost like want to tear up when you read about these poor people that have been abused, especially women in churches, these biblical patriarchy churches. My God, it's shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I've been spending a lot of effort in that area. Kathy has too, because really women have been held captive in evangelical Christian churches. They've been treated as objects, sexual objects. Their voices have been removed. Marriages, there are so many really harmful marriages going on because church leaders are allowing men to take control over their wives.
Mm.
And they're not loving their wives like Christ loves the church. I tell you that much.
That's for sure.
They're so big on submission, but it's not really what submission is all about. You know, they will say Ephesians 5:22, wives are supposed to submit to their husbands, but they don't understand that 5:21 says everybody submit to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is they've chopped that verse in half. They've borrowed the verb from 21 and stuck it into 22 and put a header in between those two verses.
Yep.
Well, guess who did that? The translators. Who were the translators? Guys.
Men.
Yeah. Men.
Absolutely. With a vested interest.
Yeah. Right. It sure makes a lot of sense when you look at it like that. But I'm thankful that there are groups out there who have torn apart the Bible and have shown that really Paul advocated for women, where it doesn't seem like he does. When you look at modern translations, Jesus was a hero for women. And, you know, the women were the first ones to see the resurrection and tell the disciples. I don't know. I kind of think that's kind of meaningful, you know?
run through this mill of biblical patriarchy and all that. Well, and then the other piece to the whole thing, something that I talked to Kristen Cobes Dumais the other day for a podcast. She just came out with a book called Jesus and John Wayne. It's all about white, male, masculine, toxic, muscular Christianity. And toward the end of the book, she gets into the many abuse scandals of some of these high profile leaders. We talked about Bill Gothard and some of the other ones, the Mark Driscolls of the world. You know, these men, these toxic, bullying, abusive pastors and leaders. This has been the legacy, one of the legacies, besides the abuse of women, all these things, these high-profile leaders that have fallen. So it's a very toxic system.
Yeah, and not only that, but clergy sexual misconduct. I deal with that quite a bit. I've exposed some pretty key people. Tully and Chavijan, who's Billy Graham's grandson, he was a chronic sexual abuser of women in his church and people he would find at conferences. I mean, we tracked down he was with seven women at the same time, you know, just depending on which conference he's going to. I've got it all documented and, you know, guess what? He's pastoring again. Say what?
Of course he is. But they restore these guys, you know, that's what happens.
Actually, you know, in this case, it was good because his Presbyterian church basically put him in church discipline, but then he kind of switched denominations. So that's how you roll, right?
That's what happened to Mark Driscoll. 5 minutes after he got can from Mars Hill, he's opening up a church in Arizona.
I know, seemingly
suffering no consequences other than the loss of his mega empire that he had running out of Seattle. He doesn't have the influence that he once did, but he's nothing really happened to him. You know, and yet he was a plagiarizer. No. He was a bully. He did all these other things. Used church funds to promote his book. Yeah, I mean, he bullied people.
Oh, he was horrific.
Said all sorts of horrific things about women and under the pseudonym of William Wallace and all the rest of it. I mean, the guy was a real piece of work. Still is a piece of work, and he's gotten away with it.
Yes,
and Bill Gothard's gotten away with it, and so many.
I know, and it is shocking. Ravi Zacharias, I exposed him.
He's another one. Lied about his credentials and said he had all these degrees, and he taught at Cambridge and Oxford. You took a class at Oxford for a week, and now you're suddenly a professor at this prestigious university. I mean, come on. Shocking.
And the thing is that, you know, people are still denying that happened.
It's all on the record, though.
We have it. We have the receipts.
There. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, listen, I need to let you go. This has been absolutely wonderful. I'm sure we're going to stay in touch. There's a lot more we could talk about. There's so much that we haven't
talked. Oh, I know.
We didn't get into my upbringing and your kind of backstory and the Bill Gothard thing. Maybe we can do that again in another episode if you're willing to come back and chat again. But thank you, Julianne. I've absolutely loved talking to you and meeting with you.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you so much.